Welcome to the Community Living Show here on the NCRA Network. And we're here live at UBC CITR 101.9 FM.
When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from your nice warm bed, you just remember what your old past said. Boy, you got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got trouble, and I got them too. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for you. We stick together, see it through, 'cause you.
And good morning. So today we have a pre-recorded show with a new friend. Her name is Sharon Saylor. She is host of Life Interrupted Radio, which is a podcast dealing with trying to inspiring stories about people who had something that interrupted their life, and as a result, their life had to take a completely different course. Because either a disability or something happened that they just couldn't continue the path they were going, but they had to change paths. So she's also a communication expert. She travels around the world helping corporate leaders communicate better, one, with their customers, and two, with their employees, trying to teach them better ways of doing business through communications. So we're going to go ahead and I'm going to get that set up. We'll switch back to another station ID, and then we'll cut straight into the interview from there. Okay.
You are listening to Tim.
We are here today with Sharon Saylor. Sharon is a best-selling author, internationally known speaker, executive coach who teaches professionals how to enhance their leadership and communication skills to achieve their personal and professional goals. Sharon, that's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful. If you want to restart it, say it however you want. Ad lib.
No, I think we're good. I'm gonna leave it at that. So what does all that really mean?
Well, that means that I love to do what I do. I travel the world teaching people how to communicate better, how to have stronger, better relationships through communication. Too often, we're afraid to really communicate and say what's on our mind because we're afraid it'll cause conflict. But if we know how to say it and the intention behind why we're saying it, rarely do we cause conflict.
That's very interesting. Because most people are so afraid of the conflict, right?
Oh, absolutely. However, there's plenty of ways to say something to somebody where you intrigue them, you get their curiosity up, you get their imagination going, and I like to call it a drive-by. You just plant that seed Maybe there's a better way of doing something. Maybe there's a better way to talk to me or other types of things. And when we just plant that seed, oftentimes through story, and I know that's one of your loves and expertise is story. So oftentimes through story, you're able to plant that seed in someone's mind that there's a better way to do something with you. It may not be a better way globally. Sometimes people just have an approach that triggers something in us from the past, and we have to say, you know, if we could say that a little bit differently, it would work better for me. So how do we communicate that to the other person?
It's a very good way to go with it. You're right with the storytelling. On a personal level, I do actually use my ability to tell stories or to convey stories to try to get my point across to people in a less indirect manner. But that doesn't work for everyone.
No, stories don't work for everyone unless you understand what they value and you can tie that your story to that value. If we're just telling an odd story that really people are maybe not attuned to, it's not from their world, it's not something that they're familiar with, then they just sort of zone out because they're going, what does this have to do with me? Because as human beings, we all have this egocentric first thought filter of, okay, what's this have to do with me? If it doesn't have anything to do with me, what can it get me? And if it can't get me anything, why do I care? And so if you don't talk to what someone values and what someone is motivated by, then people will absolutely tune out. However, there are ways to listen and understand what motivates people. So once you begin to know someone well enough, you learn what they value and motivate them, and you speak to that, and they'll love your stories because all of a sudden they're going, wow. And even if the story's not about them, oftentimes when the story is recounted something that happened at work or you're walking down the street and something happened, you're relaying something to them, but tying it to what motivates them and what they value, they get it. They can connect the dots. And it doesn't feel like a personal attack because you were just talking about this interesting exchange you had in line at Starbucks. However, they're listening for what is this about, and is this about, you know, how can I get something out of this? And they connect the dots. Voila, you've planted that seed.
Right. So it sounds more like you're. Are you starting the teaching people communication skills by helping them build better relationships also?
Oh, absolutely. If we can't communicate, our relationships get pretty sad pretty quick. But too often people don't tell the truth out of fear. It's not that they want to lie. It's that they just don't want to hurt the other person, or on the scary side, because they don't want to be hurt. Now, if that's the question, I don't want to be hurt by saying something, you have to walk into a whole other territory of, why? Is this sort of a toxic relationship that I'm worried about that? It's really empathetic if you're worried about hurting the other person. But it could be toxic if you're worried about being hurt by what you say.
Right. I totally see that. So somehow or another, better communication skills, we also eliminate the fears of that go along with communication and the truth and integrity behind it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And oftentimes people will then take a complete different approach and just not say anything. And what happens then is it just builds up resentment, it builds up anger, and it builds up physical problems too. Once we start to build up resentment and anger, stress takes over, cortisol raises. So I say just learn to communicate well, tie it to what someone values, understand and seek to understand the other person and what it's like to be the other person. Oftentimes we just communicate from ourselves, from our own culture, from our own narrow understanding of the world, and don't seek out enough views of the world to understand, hey, it's just not, I'm just not the center of the universe here. Oftentimes I coach a lot of high-level executives and travel the world, and one of the things that they get annoyed with me, that I constantly remind them is, look, it's not always about you. And that's really hard to hear sometimes. But when we realize that, say, even if a boss says something to you, and you're like, what was that about? Oftentimes I have to say to my clients, well, let's backtrack a little bit. And we unwind it with a bigger view. And we take the 30,000 foot view and go, okay, you heard this message. What else could it be about? So one of the things you want to do is come up with at least three reasons it could be about. You heard this message, it didn't sit well with you, but maybe it's not about you. So the first reason, it's about me. I need to change my performance, whatever it was. Come up with two more reasons of what it could be about, and then you begin to widen your perspective. It's amazing how you can begin to see what your boss was up against. You say, well, I know the board of directors just cut their budget, blah, blah, blah. And you can begin to see a wider view. And then when you take that wider view and go back to the boss and say something about, look, here are some ways that this could be corrected. And you talk about not just perhaps your performance, but I understand the budget was cut. Here's some things that we can do to save resources. It's amazing, the boss all of a sudden can hear you. There's no anger, there's no conflict, because you've been able to open up your view to a wider world.
I remember I had one boss, he was actually pretty awesome, and I learned a lot from him in the fact of when you go to your employer with a problem, he always asks, did you bring three solutions with you?
And that's exactly right, because the first one is always going to be sort of egocentric about you, a way to solve your internal problem, fix your internal problem. And the second one still tends to be a little bit about you and maybe a little bit about them. Mm-hmm. But by the time you start searching for this third solution, you're really starting to look outside your box. So your boss was excellent, because that's third, fourth, fifth solutions are always beginning to get outside the box of your comfort zone.
Right. And I remember several times, this is actually when I was in university, and he was the chef, and I was just one of the line cooks, and I remember going to him with problems. It was easier going to him with problems than it was other people, because, okay, he told me exactly what he wanted. If he gave me exactly what he wanted, everything went well, you know? And in the end, we usually found a viable solution that everybody would be happy. So,
Oh, absolutely. But he told you exactly what he wanted. How many times do bosses just throw a report or something on the table and say, get it done? And you're like, get what done? I don't know what to do. And then the other thing that I see happens with poor performance, which really isn't poor performance, is a boss will explain a project to someone, and then they'll say, can you do it? And the person goes, sure, no problem. But then they get into it, and they see the explanation wasn't detailed enough or full enough, or some other thing, they don't have enough resources. That's where I always tell my leaders, if someone is not getting projects done on time, the first thing it's incumbent on the leader to do is go back to that person or people, team, and say, do you have all the resources you need to get this project done? Because at the time of the original explanation, and at the time they said, sure, boss, no problem, they may have thought they had everything they needed. But it's not until they get into it that they go, uh-oh, we don't have everything we needed, I'm frozen, I can't move forward, and I'm afraid to say that. I'm afraid to go to the boss. So if a leader really wants true performance from people, going back to them a couple of days later and say, remember Project XYZ? Now that you've had a couple of days to dig into it, do you have all the resources you need? And that can work well in personal relationships, too. We just changed the language a little bit. Oh, how's it going? Need any help?
Right.
Things like that. But checking in with people and asking them. At first, it might shock them if that's not your natural tendency, but they'll really appreciate it.
Yeah. I have to say, in most cases, I believe you're absolutely right. Checking in with people after you've asked them to do something works really well.
As long as you don't come with hands on hips and a scowl on your face, looking like the fifth grade teacher, do you have all the resources you need? No, this is something coming from pure curiosity.
Yeah.
From that pure, I'm here to help. Because sometimes I see leaders sort of march in there as if this is some order on high. And then the person will freeze. They'll become fearful and say, oh, sure. Just to get the leader out of the way. So
yeah.
If you do try this technique, this is coming from understanding, from transparency, and from empathy for the person. And asking them in a true spirit, do you really have all the resources you need? I'm here for you.
No, it sounds like something I say to a lot of people that I work with, is you have to, and I usually motion with my hands, you have to stay open, and I open my arms at the same time. You have to stay open.
Absolutely. a good hand gesture to use for that, by the way, when you say stay open and you open your arms, is make sure your palms are facing up.
Oh, yeah.
Towards the sky. Upward palms. Because if we turn our palms down, and so they're facing towards the floor, that means not open to negotiation. So even if you go into someone and you say to the person, you walk in and you're standing, and they're sitting, so there's an authority body language thing going on there, and then you turn your palm down and say, do you have all the resources you need? They'll say, sure. They'll back down, because that downward palm gesture means not open to negotiation. So wise of you to open your arms and then also have your palms facing skyward, because that says I'm seeking information, I'm seeking more, I'm here to help. And so people will then all of a sudden, it's amazing how easily they'll begin to say, well, I was looking into it and the deadline isn't working, or we really need someone from sales to get over here and talk to us. It's amazing what the upward palm gesture does.
Okay, we're going to go to a quick break. Again, thank you for listening to the Community Living Show and the NCRA Networks. And we go back to Sharon Saylor.
The work relationship is really cool. But what about other relationships? Because a lot of our listeners, they have to deal with a lot of doctors and things like that. What about in those particular situations?
Oh, you've touched on my other part. I am such a huge fan of self-advocacy for our own healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that happens when we're just indoctrinated into what I call the white coat authority. And now, I view white coat authority people as highly educated helpers. They can't heal me unless I'm willing to heal myself. Because they can hand you something, they can give you a prescription, they can tell you to exercise, they can tell you to eat better, whatever it is. But until you do it, nothing changes, right?
Right.
So, but that doesn't mean that everything that they share with us, I'm a huge fan of them. We really need them in our world. But it doesn't mean that everything they share with us will fit for us. We're all individuals, we're all unique, and what they're giving us is sort of, again, that global perspective. In the large majority of people, this works. Now, they'll never say that because they've been trained to come across with a communication style of authority. Take this pill, take two aspirin, call me in the morning, you'll be better, right?
Right.
Apple a day keeps the doctor away, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And they say, do this, you'll be better. Well, not always. Not always. Not always does it work for you. Maybe you've got something much more complicated, and there's other decisions that need to be made around that. There are plenty plenty of ways to talk to healers out there, and these are, when I use the word healer, I'm talking about the entire range of medical professionals, from MDs to NDs to all the way to, you know, massage therapists, whatever it is out right. there in the world.
Anyone who yes. would help us feel healthier yeah. Or better, eliminate pain, that sort of thing, right?
Absolutely. And I have a joke that I tell some of my medical professionals in the world that, you know, look, I think most of us would be happy if you waved a chicken over our head and we got better, that would be fine. It's mm-hmm. not, but it has to work for us in our world as well. And that's where we have, it's incumbent on us or someone in our world if we're not well enough. Sometimes we're not well enough just to speak for ourselves, but really self-advocate. Ask questions. Say why. Why is this the best for me? And if they say something that doesn't work in your world, speak up about it. Because they don't know everything that's going on for you. Like, I had a medical professional one time ask me, and I thought it was a great question, what other things are happening right now for you in your body that you're not telling me? And, you know, he was a specialist, and so I've been telling him just sort of those things that I thought were related to this particular episode. And that was such a great question, because I mentioned a couple of things, and he said, those are super important to the whole scope of your health. It is rare, though, for specialists to see us as whole human beings. They're zoned into their specialty.
Right.
Let's say they're zoned into just rheumatology or just neurology, something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's important that they understand how it fits in to you as a whole human being. And so when you can begin to have that conversation, and with wider authority people, sometimes they don't take those sorts of questions well. It's just not in their nature. If you think about it, if they have to do life and death decisions all day long, they're not used to being questioned. They're not used to questioning their skills. So it's not coming from an attack. It's coming from a curiosity of you. So I'm curious how that relates to this over here. Can you tell me more about how your suggestion here relates to this over here? And then when it's non-attack, it's coming from that place of curiosity. It's amazing how oftentimes they'll open up and just say, oh, this is how it relates, or this is how it doesn't relate. And then another phrase that I love to say is, tell me more. Because oftentimes we think we know, but if you've just been handed a diagnosis, and it's usually some great big long multi-syllable word that could just sound like supercalifragilisticexpialidocious to you, you have no idea.
Yeah, there are a lot of conditions that are like that, right?
Right, exactly. And if you have no idea what they said, when I was diagnosed with mine, I was like, it meant nothing to me. I could tell it was important to them because their body language changed. Their body language completely just changed in front of me as they're trying to tell me that I have dermatomyositis. It meant nothing to me. I didn't know what it was. I'd never heard of it. Took me a month to learn how to say it. Still can't spell it. But the incredible thing was, that phrase was, so tell me more. Because too often we're just like, oh, okay, and we walk out of the doctor's office and we Google it, and then all of a sudden our mind runs crazy because we Googled it and see all the terrible things.
Well, doctors
need to learn. Our ears close when we hear things like that. Our
yeah.
brain just shuts off when we're trying to figure out, what did they just say?
Yeah, I remember one time, how is it the doctor put it? Oh, you have chronic inflammation. And I just looked at it, and it was a good thing that I had known this doctor. When he said that to me, I had been going to him for like maybe 10 or 11 years, right? I just looked at him and I was like, what does that mean for my life?
There you go. That's a great question. What's that mean for my life? It's a great question.
He came up with kind of an answer, but at least I knew exactly what I was facing, right?
Absolutely, and that's the thing. And knowing how it integrates into your life is important. Once I understood what I had and I understood what I was facing, as you say, it's important that you continue to remind the doctors you're a whole person. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes in some of the more chronic things, cancers and things like that, it's important for you or someone that you love to advocate for you, because oftentimes it's a trade-off between symptom and side effect, cure and the condition. So many times it's not cut and dried. It's not like, take this pill, you'll feel better in the morning. And so as you go through this labyrinth, especially in healthcare where it is about your life, it's important that you, I like to journal. And one of the things I do is write how my day went.
Yeah.
And some of that can be, you know, medical related. I woke up this way, or, you know, during the day this happened. But what I do is I always just journal on the right side of the page. Yeah. And then about a month later, 6 weeks later or something, I go back and just quickly scan that page. And on the left side of the page, I write what's changed. Because if you're facing a chronic medical condition, you think you'll remember. Trust me, you won't. You think you'll remember what happened 3 months ago, 6 months ago, what that med was, whatever. You won't.
Yeah.
So I find that it's really helpful to write everything down on the right side of the page. Is it just a journal? I like to journal anyway. And then go back and reread and write what's changed on the left side of the page. It's so helpful, because then you can say to your medical professionals, or even about other events in the world, you know, doc, when back 3 months ago, and you can explain this situation, you know, since we tried this intervention and that intervention, this has changed.
Right.
It's very helpful for them, too, because, number one, they see that you're concerned, you're on top of it, that you can have an adult conversation. Oftentimes, they want to be very careful and treat us sometimes a little too kid gloves. And I often say to them, hey, look, yeah. I've got my big girl panties on. Let's tell me the truth. Let's have an adult conversation here.
Right, right. So you mentioned a elongated word that means that you have a certain condition. Can you tell the story about how you were first diagnosed?
Well, yeah, it was very strange. I've been going to a dermatologist for a year, being told it was atopic dermatitis, which is just sort of like a skin rash, an allergy, an unknown allergy.
Yeah.
And I kept saying, you know, to myself, you know, I don't know, that just doesn't seem right. I've stopped perfume, stopped this, stopped that, you know, and all the things. I can't imagine what I'd be allergic to. Pretty soon you start eliminating so many things. And then I was in Florida for a business trip. I was traveling what they call Alligator Alley between Miami and Naples. And just during that short period of time, any sun, skin that was exposed through the windows just broke out in massive hives. Now, this wasn't a sunburn. This was hives. It was very odd. I was like, something isn't right. And then as the day continued, once I even got inside, the hives continued. And, of course, it's like, this is not good, right? I proceeded to do my, looked terrible, told everybody, I was assured I wasn't contagious at the ER room, but they had no real solution for it. Went and continued with my project the next day. Luckily, they're old-time clients and quite okay with it. But, Sharon, you're not looking so good. Flew back home, and that's when my dermatologist took one look at me, looked up for some other signs and symptoms such as that I wasn't looking for, that dermatomyositis has, such as strange fingernail beds and what they call a heliotrope rash on your eyes, which I had. And that's when I got the diagnosis. So it was really strange because I knew it wasn't good because this was a dermatologist I'd had for a long time. And as I mentioned before, her body language changed immediately. I'm like, okay, this isn't good. But speaking in her medical speak, my ears closed. I could tell it wasn't good, so a little fear set in. And then she starts saying these great big long words like dermatomyositis. And I'm like, and you go inside trying to figure it out. And so you're busy being inside trying to figure it out. You don't really hear what was just said. And so that's why it's important to slow down the clock. And as you said, tell me what that means for my life. It's a great question.
So how did this condition actually change your life?
Oh my goodness, in so many ways. I still travel the world loving to do what I do, and that's helping professionals communicate better, understand body language, become better public speakers. I just love that. It's what I do. But it also struck me out on a whole new mission. I am the host of Life Interrupted Radio, where I get amazing guests on the show to talk about how to help you thrive after the unexpected. Now, my medical diagnosis was completely unexpected, and it did interrupt my life for several months. Had to make major changes in travel and scheduling, and now I'm much more careful about my environment, including stress, ways to reduce stress on traveling and things like that. Another wonderful thing that happened, oddly enough, I became much more picky who I would work with. I had been picky, I would say, who I work with, but now I really only work with people I absolutely enjoy. So there's a little side note there. One way to reduce stress in your life is really just work with those people that you really, really love to work with. But Life Interrupted Radio is just my other passion now, because it's all about teaching people, not just from me, but from amazing experts I found in the world, about communication skills, other health skills, nutrition. We've had experts on everywhere from how to deal with grief to self-compassion. The Art of Self-Compassion with Sarah Payton is just a fabulous podcast. As well as another one was a woman who was a highly paid financier in South Africa. And one day she just gave it all up. Her family thought she was nuts. And she became an intuitive. And now she has a thriving practice as an intuitive and is happier than ever. So it's not just about preparing ourselves for unexpected medical issues. But, we all have speed bumps and unexpected things that happen in the world. And it's just knowing that there are other people out there and being able to find out what they did to get through it. And that's what I love about it, is being able to share, hey, look, somebody's probably been on a similar road, not certainly your road, but a similar road, and maybe they can share a few things that, if they don't work exactly, maybe you can adapt them and make them work for you.
That is probably one of the best things anybody's ever said on this show. For some people it's a force thing, and then other people it just takes them a while to come around to it. Because some of my guests have had hidden illnesses such as fibromyalgia, arthritis, things like that, and then others it was a drunk driving accident, and they never got up again. They're in a chair, And then some of our other listeners out there, they were just born that way. So that's just the way things are, right? So.
Well, what I like to look at my world about is, instead of what I call what happened to me with dermatomyositis, sometimes I think, somebody asked me this question, do you want your Would you like your old life back? I'm like, it's in a lot of ways, no. Because first off, it got me to where I am with the dermatomyositis.
Mm-hmm.
But I also look with the dermatomyositis as making meaning from what happened. And that's important to me, that we make meaning from what happened and make a positive meaning, and that's not sugarcoating, that's not adding frosting, you know, to something stinky. This is just all about making a true meaning, a true difference. Okay, that happened, I learned this and this and this. And one of the things I learned was how important it was to self-advocate in the medical profession. That I could take all the skills that I help executives in the boardroom all the time with and help people understand how to be better patients, better, you know, self-advocate for themselves, to not put right. healing on that other person, but put healing on to yourself, how to heal yourself. Yeah. And that's where with Life Interrupted Radio comes about, is having wonderful guests on that have already found some meaning in what happened and has turned it into positives that they can share. And oftentimes, I heard the phrase one time, work on making meaning, not getting stuck in your mood. And I thought that's really powerful, because even in tragedy, if we stay stuck in a particular mood too long, it can keep us trapped. And then that's no way to live in a trapped environment. Even encouraging people that have had tragedies, such as your friend with the wheelchair, to understand what meanings, what opportunities are there now.
Yeah.
Yes, these opportunities are no longer there. But searching for the true meanings and the true opportunities that are there now can really add such a richness to your life. And that's what's happened with my diagnosis. I've got... Well, a lot of the things that happened to me were an outpouring and an understanding of how many friends I really have and how many true friends, deeply connected friends that I really have. Oftentimes you get busy in your day and you're like, I'll get to them or I'll get to that or whatever. But sometimes slowing down like that, you know, it's amazing what happens.
Yeah, sometimes it's better to slow down and be, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes
that's not easy.
As human beings, we have trouble with that, right? As for the one guest that her name is actually Carrie.
And we need to go to another break, and we'll be right back.
Thunderstorms, see the lightning flashing. Thunderstorms.
Thank you for stopping that. If you actually want to learn more about weather, join the UBC Storm Club. For more information, email us at stormubc@gmail.com. Stop playing those cheesy songs and tune into News 101 Mondays and Fridays for your CITR weather forecast.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Don't just hate radio, just love your radio.
And we're back. Let's start with Sharon again and listen to the rest of the interview finish up. Okay, thank you.
Yes, she did have the tragedy. Yes, she did wind up in a wheelchair afterwards. But she is such a great person in the community that we actually invited her to be one of the people help us gather guests in for our show. She is that much of a bubbly person. So, she's a fantastic person. So,
amazing.
She was a bubbly person before the accident, so it didn't change that part. So, making her one of the more amazing people I actually know. So.
That's the important part, is to keep those parts of you that are still important to you. And bubbly personality, whatever it is, keep those parts of you that are still important. And search for other things that can fill maybe what you might feel is missing, because they're always out there.
Right.
So I'm just one of those people that always sees opportunities everywhere, which sometimes can be a detriment because you can get distracted easily. But but I find it also, to me, I just accept it for what it is.
Yeah. Acceptance, you know. And I totally understand what you're saying about other opportunities coming around and everything. It's like people say, it's like, Michael, did you see another squirrel?
I love that movie, Squirrel. My friends say that to me all the time. But, you know, sometimes those squirrels open up. Life Interrupted Radio was a squirrel. It came to me. It really has nothing to do, in some respects. I'm running two jobs, so to speak, now, my communication skills training and Life Interrupted Radio. They do have, I mean, they're both me, so there's a lot of cross-connection that way. But they're two separate tracks. But that's what's really wonderful, is sometimes chasing a squirrel turns out to be just, you know, an amazing chase and a lot of fun and a lot of rewards. So
yeah.
Not all squirrels are bad to chase.
Well, actually, this show is a squirrel for me also. everybody here on Community Living Radio and the CITR, UBC Radio, we're all volunteers. There's like a handful of real UBC employees, but the rest of us are volunteers. So people are like, you give a lot to that show for you to be a volunteer, trying to, you know, find content, find people to interview, things like that. You know what it's like with Life Interrupted. It's like, you know, trying to always find the next show, right?
Yes, podcasts are not as easy as people think when you listen to them. They sound really cool, but there's a lot of back hidden stuff behind making a great radio show.
Right. You know, there's a lot of stuff that has to happen in the background. I think we've talked at least five or six times before we even got to this point of actually having the interview. And some of the backstory that people don't actually see. I'm giving away secrets now.
That's okay.
But it becomes a passion
to
you, right?
Secrets that people understand that, you know, there's always something behind the magic.
Yeah.
And if people say the kind of work I do with body language, you go, wow, that's magic. I'm like, no, there's something behind the magic. Just to understand the principles behind the magic, and you can make magic too.
Yes, that is very true. And that was kind of closer to the point of me bringing all that up. About how much actually goes into this. If I can have a video production company and do this, you know, all because that's what I'm passionate about, all those things, then what can you fill your life with, no matter who you are, right?
Exactly.
So.
And sometimes people say, well, I don't know what I'm passionate about. And a couple of things I like to say. First off, go back to your childhood. Think back, take some time, go for a walk, meditate if that works for you. Sometimes people say that doesn't work for them because they can't sit still long enough. So go for a walk, find a comfortable place to sit, but in a park, whatever. And just think back, what did I like to do as a child? You know, you might begin to hear a voice like I did in fifth grade where my music teacher told me I sing like a dead cow in a bucket. That's okay. But that, knowing that was someone else stopping you, that was still something you loved to do. And go, oh, don't listen to that old voice of someone else stopping you. Going, no, I really remember I was passionate about that. Or if there's something that's always just been rattling around your day, in your brain, like, one day I'm going to try. Well, go try it. Absolutely, go try it. You know that you and I chatted before about this crazy birthday thing I do, and it's every birthday I challenge myself to do something I've never done before. And it's a great way to find out what is your passion. You might go do something and go, wow, didn't know I'd enjoy it this much. So absolutely, yeah. You know, the world is just amazing in all the opportunities. I say, go chase a couple squirrels.
Yeah, always. Don't let the squirrels just pass you by. If you see one that looks cute, go after it.
Yeah. One winks at you as it goes by. Maybe that's when you fall.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay. If you guys don't mind, I have a quick story about a live squirrel. And I actually use this as a tool when people say that they feel like they're chasing too many squirrels. I actually have a photograph of a squirrel in the Grand Canyon. Well, that squirrel bugged me until I spent 3 rolls of film. This is in the film days, guys. 3 rolls of film photographing that squirrel. He just kept coming back.
Well, and 3 rolls later,
what's that?
He was a ham.
Yeah, he was a ham. He wanted to be photographed, and it was one of the best photographs I actually had offers to from people wanting to publish that particular photograph.
Wow! Well, congratulations. And I know I'm from the old film days too.
Yeah.
I think the young people don't understand what a dedication and cost that was to do all those rolls of film. That's amazing, because now we just, you know, click delete.
Right. Yeah, it's like my current camera is like, I take 24 pictures in about maybe 5 seconds. but it's, sometimes it's good to, you know, just have fun with the squirrel.
You know, absolutely.
And I think that was one of the things that when we were introduced to each other, I think it was something we figured out early on between the two of us. We like the squirrels.
Absolutely. You know, it was funny, and I want to share with people, you know, be a connector, because that's how Michael and I met, was to someone else who I consider a connector. He said, hey, you two have a lot in common, you should chat. And be a connector out there, because it really is wonderful when you expand your world like that, you expand your universe like that, and amazing opportunities pop up when you start being the connector for other people. Like,
right.
Sometimes people say, well, opportunities never happen to me. Like, well, a couple of things. Are you looking for them? And number two is, if you're the start being the connector of other people, like, oh, I think Joe and Fred would like to talk to each other. They both like golfing and, you know, whatever, fishing. And so you connect them.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden other people start going, well, she really connected us, didn't she? Yeah. Well, you know, wouldn't Sharon like to meet, you know, Susan or James or something like that? And it's amazing how your world will expand when you become a connector. And that's, to me, is another part of communication, is becoming a great connector.
Can you tell people exactly how easy it is to really become that connector?
Oh, it's so easy. I love email warm introductions, is what I call them. And depending on the person, now, you need to be respectful. Certain people in my world are well-known or high up or whatever word you want to put on that. And I have to be respectful of their time and who I introduce them to.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of people just like me that just like to meet people. And so I will always email my friend or the person I'm wanting to connect, both parties, and say, I'd like to connect you to so-and-so. And I give them a little bit of bio why I think I would connect. Might have a lot in common, and you start. And then you email the other James, and you say, I want you to meet Joe. And then if they both say okay, I just write an email saying, hi, James, meet Joe. Joe, meet James. And then I put in the two little bios that I wrote to each other why I think they'd have connections. And I just, you know, give my old sign off and say, now you two go take it from here. Now, sometimes people follow up, sometimes they don't. But what did that take me? 3 emails, 5 minutes. And it's amazing the people you meet and the adventures that happen just by doing connecting people in your network. And I love it. I think it's so much fun when you meet people that you never would have had an opportunity to meet.
Be
respectful. I think that's the one thing that bothers me is when, two things. I haven't been asked before. And like, is it okay that I introduce you to so-and-so? Because you don't know. Maybe they know them and, I don't know, maybe it's their wife's ex-husband. So be respectful and ask beforehand, is it okay if I connect you with James? And then also be respectful of their time. So you don't want to do this, you know, 50 times in one day to somebody. Be respectful of both for people's times. And it's a great way to broaden your network as well.
Yeah. I like that. It might be somebody's ex or something like that. Getting back to the 2 degrees of separation.
Well, yeah. It's amazing when you start talking to people, and I travel a lot, like I've mentioned, you could say something, and I'm from Oregon, and most people, sometimes people don't even know where Oregon is. It's above California. But anyway, sometimes it's amazing the people you'll meet. Oh, I grew up in Portland, or I was at Johns Hopkins not too long ago, and I met a doctor who'd gone to a college I'd gone to. Not a medical school, of course, but just a college that we'd both gone to the same college in Portland, Oregon. It was like, wow, how strange. Small world. So it's fun. It's fun to connect people.
It is a lot of fun. And you are a lot of fun. Of course, we're starting to run out of time right now. So you have a few different projects going on here. So what is the best way to find you, one, as the communication expert, and two, what about Life Interrupted Radio? How do they find that podcast?
Oh, thank you for asking. Well, the easiest way to find me about my communications work, body language work, all of that, is if you go to SharonSaylor.com, Sharon, SHARON, Saylor, SAY, LER.com/radio gift. You'll get a really cool 25-page ebook I wrote on the 7 things that could kill your career. I think there's a longer title than that, but that's what I call it. 7 things that kill your career. And it's a really fun talk. It gives you even more in-depth tips about body language and communication that we touched on. And then Life Interrupted Radio is found at www.lifeinterruptedradio.com. There's all the old podcasts there, as well as the upcoming show is always listed there. Or you can always find it on iTunes as Life Interrupted Radio. So thank you for asking, because we cover a wide range of challenges. They're everything from nutrition to grief to self-compassion to living your dreams to like this. Just a wide range of things, and which I just love.
Yeah. There's one thing about capturing stories of people. There's such a wide, so many different stories and so many different reasons why people have, they may have similarities in their stories, you know?
There are a lot of similarities in the stories, which always surprise me, and a lot of the techniques for coming out and thriving are very similar. So even if you think, I'm not going through that exactly, listen in. You might be able to adapt it.
Yeah, exactly. Again, thank you, Sharon. It's been great to speak with you today.
It's been fantastic. Thanks for having me.
Okay, that was the interview with Sharon Saylor. Please do go to her website, Sharon Saylor, SharonSaylor, SAYLER lifeinterrupted.com or onto Life Interrupted Radio. And check out what she does. Check out more of what she has to say. She's a fantastic person. I really enjoyed interviewing her that particular day. We had a lot of fun on a Skype call. She was actually in Cleveland, Ohio when we did this, and we just had a lot of fun capturing a Skype call. And you heard the giggles, you heard the comments and everything. So go ahead and check out her show also. And I will actually be appearing on her show in the next couple weeks. So it's going to be a lot of fun. All right. Thank you for joining us today on the Community Living Show. And we will see you tomorrow afternoon on the Half Hour Show.